Blue Stem Jazz presents Chad McCullough's Modal Horizons, the music of Jim Knapp, featuring Jay Thomas, on Friday, May 8th, 8 p.m. at the Borough. Chicago native Jim Knapp had a long and storied career with affiliations as varied as John Cage, Sam Rivers, Anthony Braxton, Manfred Eicher, and Gil Evans. For the first time in many years, his music will be performed in the Midwest with a world-class 13-piece ensemble led by Chicago trumpeter Chad McCullough, along with trumpeter and saxophonist Jay Thomas. More information can be found at bluestemjazz.org. Blue Stem Jazz presents Chad McCullough's Modal Horizons, the music of Jim Knapp, featuring Jay Thomas, on Friday, May 8th, 8 p.m. at the Borough. Live music lives at WORT Madison.
Welcome to Radio Literature, Madison's weekly look at poetry, fiction, nonfiction, theater, and experimental writing for readers of all ages. Settle in for a half hour of conversation on radio literature. Here's your host, Melvin Hinton.
Buddy, welcome to another edition of Radio Literature. Well, here in the studio with me are two outstanding actors, Chad Pfeiffer and Mitch Taylor. This is their first time on this program, as far as I know, unless they were here one of those times when I was away.
It's our first time.
Yes, first time.
But anyway, Chad Pfeiffer and Mitch Taylor. And before we find out more about them, why don't we start off with a poem? And Chad Pfeiffer is going to read this poem. It's called Poets, Towers of God. Now, this is a translation from Spanish, and it's by the poet Rubén Darío, who was from Nicaragua. And he was actually the father, the originator, the creator, the one who started the modernist movement in Spain and Latin America. He left Nicaragua, went to Spain, and just revolutionized the whole poetry business in the Spanish-speaking world. Rubén Darío, Poets, Towers of God, and then I will read the original Spanish after Chad reads the English translation.
Poets, towers of God, made to resist the fury of the storms, like cliffs beside the ocean, or clouded savage peaks. Masters of lightning, breakwaters of eternity. Hope, magic voice, foretells the day when on the rock of harmony the siren, traitorous, shall die and pass away, and there shall only be the full, frank billowed music of the sea. Be hopeful still, though bestial elements yet turn from song with rancorous ill will, and blinded races one another spurn. Perversity, debased among the high, her rebel cry has raised. The cannibal still lusts after the raw, knife-toothed and gory-faced. Towers, your laughing banners now unfold. Against all hatreds and all envious lies, upraise the protest of the breeze half-told and the proud quietness of sea and skies.
Torres de Dios, poetas, para rayos celestes que resistís las duras tempestades como crestas escuetas, como picos agrestes, rompe olas de las eternidades. La mágica esperanza anuncia el día en que sobre la roca de armonía expirará la pérfida sirena. Esperad, esperemos todavía, esperad todavía. El bestial elemento se solaza en el odio a la sacra poesía y se arroja baldón de raza a raza. La insurrección de abajo tiende a los excelentes. El caníbal codicia su tasajo con roja encía y afilados dientes. Torres, poned al pabellón sonrisa, poned ante ese mal y ese recelo una soberbia insinuación de brisa y una tranquilidad de mar y cielo. Rubén Darío, Poets, Towers of God, poetas, torres de Dios, o torres de Dios, poetas. Really, in Spanish, it's the opposite.
And it, the translation was read by Chad Pfeiffer. And we're going to have another poem, and then I will introduce you more fully to our guest. This poem will be read by Mitch Taylor, and it's to the sonnet by a poet named Amin Rihani. This is, and in fact, most of the poets we are reading tonight were unknown to me just a few days ago. There are so many people writing poetry these days, so I like to see what's new out there. And Amin Faris Rihani is considered the founder of Arab American literature, and he was born in Lebanon, of course, in 1876, when Lebanon was part of the Ottoman Empire. He eventually became an American citizen. So this is Amin Faris Rihani. The poem is To the Sonnet, and it's read by Mitch Taylor.
Though cribbed and jived, thou canst within thy walls unfold a wondrous wealth of worlds unseen, and flood the soul's abyss with moonlight sheen, as well as darken passion's gilded halls. Thy 14 outlets are so many falls from which gush out the prisoned joy or spleen, the silvery cascades or the billows green, and either a sea of bliss or grief recalls. Thou goddess of the gems of fancy's deep, though few thy facets, they reflect the whole of inner self in multi-shaded hues. Thou art the couch of dreams that never sleep. Thou art the phoenix of the poet's soul, as well the crystal palace of his muse.
Okay. So until a few minutes ago, I didn't know Chad or Mitch, although we did exchange a few emails over the last two or three days. And I wondered if they knew each other, and it turns out they did have met, and they met recently. And can you tell us a bit about how you've worked together?
Absolutely. We recently did a staged reading with the Falcon Bridge Players at the Arts Lit.
The Art and Lit Lab, yes.
Art and Lit Lab. That was in March.
Which one was that?
That was In the Next Room is what that was called.
Oh, the one yes. You were talking about. Oh, yeah, I missed that, yeah.
That's right. And we are both participating this summer with Madison Shakespeare Company's productions. Dido, Queen of Carthage, which will be
End of June, end of June.
And then Love's Labor's Lost.
Mm. Well, I hope not to miss those.
You better not.
Yeah.
I feel very close to you after our talk outside. I'd be very disappointed if you didn't come.
So, Chad, you do a literary podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about that? You've been doing this for 15 years?
Yeah, this is our 15th year. The podcast is called Strange Studies of Strange Stories. And we cover short genre fiction, no living authors, so it's mostly from the early 20th century. We originally started in 2009 as the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast. H.P. Lovecraft is a science fiction and horror author from the early 20th century. We burned through all of his works 2009 to 2012, so we started covering other types of fiction that are like that. And just did the name change a couple of years ago because it was almost 10 years since we'd covered that author and decided to make it a little more broad of an offering.
So, you know, podcasts are still a mystery to me.
Mm-hmm.
How does one find your podcast? Somebody like me who has no idea, who barely knows what a podcast is.
Sure. Well, you can just search it in the Google. Just type in Strange Studies of Strange Stories and you'll be taken to the place that you need to go.
On a regular computer.
On a regular old computer or a robot if you've got one.
Okay. Mitch Taylor, have you worked with Madison Shakespeare Company before these productions coming up in the summer?
Yeah, I just recently was in their Valentine's show. Every year they do a Valentine's affair on Valentine's Day. They do a selection of Shakespeare scenes around the theme of love. Every year it's a different selection of scenes. Shakespeare has a very big body of work. He did a lot of things about love and romance, so they have a broad selection to pull from. They pick different things every year. I had the opportunity to see it last year and was very impressed, so I was really excited to get to be a part of the ensemble this year. And we're putting that one back on in Lake Mills first weekend of June. June 1st and 2nd in Lake Mills. We'll be doing that two more times.
Okay. Yeah, I missed that one too. I did get the I think the previous one or two times or the or 2 years ago. I'm not sure which. And I loved it. I've caught two of them. One was outside. That was different. That was a full play. And I really enjoyed that one. I don't remember right now which play it was. But have you done any of those that are done outside, actually in the open air?
Well, this year, both of those shows that we're in will be outside.
Okay.
In fact, it's kind of a novel performance venue for Dido, Queen of Carthage. That's going to be at the Children's Museum space. It's like a big piece of playground equipment we'll be doing it on.
Yeah.
So that's one that people aren't going to want to miss.
Yeah.
And then more traditional amphitheater for Love's Labor's Lost.
Okay.
That's the way to see it in the summer, you know? You got to be outside, have a little picnic lunch, and check it out.
Yeah. Just hope it doesn't rain.
Yeah. Okay, let's have another poem. And this time we go to one of the powerhouses, we could say, of the 20th century, Marianne Moore. And whenever I see her name, I think of the actress,
Julianne Moore?
Julianne Moore, yeah.
Sure.
And I have to think for a second, you know, which one am I thinking about, the poet or the actress? So Julianne Moore was born in 1887. You see, we're moving up closer to closer to the 20th century. And she was also a modernist poet, but she was one of those names that if you were a reader, even if you didn't read poetry, her name was everywhere, Marianne Moore. And I believe that's Chad that's going to be reading her poem called Poetry.
Yes. Poetry. I too dislike it. There are things that are important beyond all this fiddle. Reading it, however, with a perfect contempt for it, one discovers that there is in it, after all, a place for the genuine. Hands that can grasp, eyes that can dilate, hair that can rise if it must. These things are important, not because of a high-sounding interpretation can be put upon them, but because they are useful. When they become so derivative as to become unintelligible, the same thing may be said for all of us, that we do not admire what we cannot understand. The bat, holding an upside down, or in quest of something to eat, elephants pushing, a wild horse taking a roll, a tireless wolf under a tree, the immovable critic twinkling his skin like a horse that feels a flea, the baseball fan, the statistician, case after case could be cited, did one wish it. Nor is it valid to discriminate against business documents and school books. All these phenomena are important. One must make a distinction, however. When dragged into prominence by half-poets, the result is not poetry. Nor till the autocrats among us can be literalists of the imagination, above insolence and triviality, and can present for inspection imaginary gardens with real toads in them, shall we have it. In the meantime, if you demand on the one hand, in defiance of their opinion, the raw material of poetry in all its rawness, and that which is on the other hand genuine, then you are interested in poetry.
Hmm. If we weren't on the radio and we didn't have to worry about the clock, I would say, could you please read that again?
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Lot to unpack.
Yeah. Do you read much poetry? I know people don't have time for reading in general these days because we have so many. I mean, emails just up so much time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised not too long ago when a person that I thought was, one of these people that's really computer savvy, was surprised that I would check my spam folder every day, because there's always, at least I'd say five times a week, I find things in my spam folder that need to be in the inbox. So I check, because otherwise I might miss important things.
It's like your couch cushions. You don't know what treasures you'll find in there.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what is your relationship with poetry? Or do you have one?
I do. Well, I have
other
a degree in the teaching of English, so I got my requisite poetry classes out of the way. I have to admit I'm not reading it that much these days, but I do have some anthologies that I keep around the house. Love Ogden Nash, love E.E. Cummings. So I'll pick up one of those, and they're short little bites, and it's so much better than looking at your phone, which will depress you and make you feel bad and possibly ruin your day. So I do think, folks, get some poetry collections and just leave them about the house for when you have idle moments.
Yeah. What about you, Mitch?
I haven't read too much since college. Recently read a little Robert Bly, which I liked a lot. Mm. He's a currently living poet, but not too much experience with mm-hmm. it outside that.
Okay. Well, be sure to go and look up some poetry of Robert Hayden's. And of course, Gwendolyn Brooks. Are you familiar with Gwendolyn
yes.
Brooks? So are you? Do you teach English currently?
Not currently. It's been quite a long time. Unless you count my podcast. It's a little bit of freelance teaching,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah. But Gwendolyn Brooks is... she's just one of the most exquisite poets that ever existed. And many people just don't know about her. She was the first black person to win the Pulitzer Prize for poetry. And they could have given her two or three Pulitzers for that first book, or one for the subsequent books. And she is just a master of the sonnet. I love her sonnets. I love Shakespeare's sonnets, but I love Gwendolyn Brooks' sonnets too.
Yeah.
So please find some poetry of Gwendolyn Brooks and Robert Hayden. And
I have a great appreciation for sonnets because we were talking about this a little bit before the show started. You know, free verse is wonderful. Like I said, I like E.E. Cummings. But I find that when you limit the universe a little bit, that's when people really get creative.
Yeah.
And so the haiku, the sonnet forms are always really impressive when somebody can pull that off.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so the next poem we come to a poet that I discovered that I really want to read more of and more about. This is Irena Klepfiz, who was born in 1941. I don't know if she's still alive or not, but she was born in the Warsaw Ghetto. She's a Jewish author. She immigrated to the United States. She majored in English at the City College of New York. And then she received a PhD in English from the University of Chicago. We have a poem, Winter Light, which I believe Mitch Taylor is going to read for us.
Yes. Almost December. Indifferent to seasons, the marigolds persist. I'm surprised by their pluck and lack of propriety, their ability to ignore the inappropriate. A rusted, leaking window box, a shaky fire escape leading to a cemented street below. They do not mourn that all good things must come to an end, and accept that end as fate or destiny. Instead, without struggle or assessment of soil, moisture, heat, air, they continue blooming in chilling winter light. Exactly as they did all summer.
Okay. And we have another poem. So I believe this is the only one that I actually chose two poems by because I guess I felt some affinity with this poet, Irena Klepfiz. So we have another poem called The House. And this is really the one that I... This is the second one I came across, but the one that really... set my soul on fire, as they say. Irena Klepfiz, The House, and we have Chad again.
The House. Arranging it is far easier than living it. The books stand ready on the shelves. Classifications by time or place come naturally to me. Alone, finding the book important is difficult. I've started to live here many mornings, opening my eyes, vowing, this morning I will really begin. Objects intrude themselves. Floors need sweeping, and one carton unopened is hidden in a closet. The telescope is still disassembled. At night, the skies are clear. Mirrors and lenses lie in velvet-lined cases. I am afraid to use them. One of my cats was badly clawed. I could see layers of muscle and fat. My neighbor warns there are foxes here. I do not tell my neighbor. His cats look wild. I do not know my neighbor's name. There are fears to which I do not admit. There are fears which I refuse to name. Alone in the dark, I am afraid of others, but also of the clean smell of the refrigerator. The freshness of chlorine draws me. I walk quickly towards the bedroom. This morning, I cleaned the yard. I saw a face from the city in the trees. The face was a mask, and I pulled it off, but there was nothing. Patterns in rock originated from pressure. The veins were once separate stones, pushed together, stamped into other hard flesh. They merged and became ornamental. The colors blend surprisingly well. Rings match shapes and textures. Unwilling, inanimate, they played their roles. The iceberg scraping off layers till the desired smoothness was achieved. I do not understand my place in it. It seems to have a life of its own, made by others simply on loan for a year. They ask me, how was your book? And I give accurate gas meter readings, wondering where I will be next year. The world here is fluid, the beaches undefined. There are rocks whose function I do not know.
It's hard to speak after this poem. Let's see. That was House by Irena Klepfis, read by Chad Fizer. And before we go to another poet, whose name, I'll give you the name first, Mahmoud Darwish, who is the author of many poetry collections and was considered Palestine's most eminent poet. We'll come back to Mahmoud Darwish in a moment, but I want to ask Mitch Taylor. I assume you went to college.
Yes, here in Madison.
Okay. At the UW or Edgewood or?
UW-Madison, yeah.
Okay. And what did you major in?
Television and film.
Okay. Is there any reason you didn't go into theater rather than television? You went into television and film rather than theater?
I suppose I was still a teenager at the time, didn't know too much about the world or what my place in it would be. And I figured television and film, there were possibly a lot more jobs waiting for me on the other side of my degree.
Mm.
Of course, I'm not working in theater or television or film now, but I did take the opportunity to take acting classes while I was there and other theater classes. So I did a little bit of, you know, every different little thing that I liked, I had the opportunity to take classes in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes me think of my major professor in college as an undergraduate. She had a master's in Spanish from Cornell, but she said her favorite teacher when she was doing her master's there was, I can't remember his name right now, but he was a famous writer and teacher. Then I guess academics could become famous, like almost like actors.
Sure.
He was in French literature, and she said he was her favorite teacher when she was there. So how did you get into theater, both of you?
I was doing, you know, church programs as a little kid. You know, when we did our Christmas pageants or, you know, Christmas plays, I'd get up there in front of the congregation and, you know, play a character. My hometown of Milton, Wisconsin, about 40 minutes south of here or so, had a local organization that would put on a children's play every year, the Milton Optimists Club. They would put on a play that would cast children from, I believe, second grade through eighth grade. So that was kind of how I got my start. I did those between third grade and eighth grade.
Oh, yeah. And how did Jason and Madison Shakespeare Company discover you?
We were both working on a sketch show about 2 years ago.
You and Jason?
He was directing. It was sort of an anthological sort of sketch show where they had a bunch of scenes written by people around Madison. Mm-hmm. They brought in a bunch of different directors, and I was actually just doing the tech for it. I hung the lights and ran the soundboard and everything. But that was how I met Jason. And then he saw me act in a couple other things, and I started auditioning for things he did, and we've been working together quite a bit since.
Oh, okay. And what about you, Chad? How did you get into theater?
Very similar. You know, well, I was very shy when I was little, but the first theater production that I saw, I couldn't stay in my seat. I just wanted to get up on stage with those guys. So the first opportunity I had in school, I did theater and loved it so much that I actually moved to Los Angeles when I was 22 to pursue it and live there for 25 years. I've only been living in Madison for the last couple of years and did work in TV and film a little bit. In fact, I had a movie come out. I'm going to plug that came out in 2022 called The Time Capsule, which you can see on any of your streaming services. But I co-wrote that because I quickly found that when you're pursuing acting professionally, you don't get to act all that much because you're spending so much time on the business side of it. And I more and more liked going to my writing meetings. I was also writing. But where you go to an audition as an actor, they kind of treat you like cattle. At least you got a bottle of water out of the writing meeting, whether you even, you know, got the job or not. So I kept pursuing that, which is why I ended up being a screenwriter. But during the pandemic, my wife and I, who has actually appeared on this show before, Heather Klinke, I met her in the theater. We did the Second City Conservatory when they moved out to Los Angeles. We did that for years. Now that we're back here in Madison, I was lucky to audition for the Madison Shakespeare Company, and I'm really happy to be back on stage again. Because like I say, I was a little away from it for a while, and it's my favorite thing to do.
Oh. Okay, so I think this will probably be our last poem. I announced Mahmoud Darwish, who was born in 1941, the same year as Irena Krepfiz, and he died in 2008. And this is a poem, I believe Mitch is reading this.
Yes.
Mitch Taylor, and it's called I Belong There.
I belong there. I have many memories. I was born as everyone is born. I have a mother, a house with many windows, brothers, friends, and a prison cell with a chilly window. I have a wave snatched by seagulls, a panorama of my own. I have a saturated meadow. In the deep horizon of my word, I have a moon, a bird's sustenance, and an immortal olive tree. I have lived on the land long before swords turned man into prey. I belong there. When heaven mourns for her mother, I return heaven to her mother. And I cry so that a returning cloud might carry my tears. To break the rules, I have learned all the words needed for a trial by blood. I have learned and dismantled all the words in order to draw from them a single word, home.
That was Mitch Taylor reading I Belong There, a poem by Mahmoud Darwish. And since it's time for us to go, I just might mention that I hope Summer, our regular engineer, will be feeling better soon. And thank you to Dave. I've tried as hard as I could, and I just cannot remember Dave's last name. but he knows who he is. Thanks to Dave, one of my favorite engineers and one of my favorite people that I don't get to see too often. So I'm glad that he's engineering for us tonight. And thanks to Mitch Taylor and Chad Pfizer, our guests tonight on Radio Literature. And please join us again.
Pfeiffer.
Pfeiffer. Ah, Pfeiffer.
That's I just don't want to get
Chad
in trouble
Pfeiffer.
For any bad vaccines that are out there or anything.
And Mitch Taylor. Join us again next week on Radio Literature. Good night.
And you're listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison. Stay tuned. We've got some good music coming up.
Find yourself more enraged with every news headline?
Do you have crippling anxiety when you see pictures of starving polar bears on melting icebergs? Are you shaking your fists at every new threat to bodily autonomy?
If you answered yes to these questions, we have an answer for you. Her Turn, WORT's feminist news, airs every Sunday at 11 a.m., and the Collective is looking for new volunteers to join us.
No previous experience needed, just a commitment to feminist news and a willingness to bring more women's voices to the radio. Call 608-256-2001 and say you want to volunteer on Her Turn.
Turn your anger into action. Turn your anxiety into hopefulness. Turn your discouragement into power. Volunteer with Her Turn right here on WORT Madison and make your woman's voice heard.